10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Good evening from 12, from Sterling every damn Sunday. We're going to go over the death of President Carter. Plus, I have some amazing information for you about Route 80 in New Jersey. Now, weather. Good evening, Walter M. Sterling, across America, hands across America, sweaty, nervous hands across America, just as though you were on a first date. It's your first time listening to a really different radio show. Why is it different? Well, for starters, we're on big 50,000-watt radio stations and KMBZ-FM, Allen First in Kansas City. Big radio stations. Why is that? We're on big radio stations because this is a very unusual show. And the program directors who put this show on their station said, you know, I am sick of these clowns screaming at political theory. What kind of programming is it that you've got only two answers, Democrats or Republicans? What? And why have you been doing it for 30 years? I don't get it. But for 10 years now, this show has said, well, you know, there may be other things to talk about in my day. Would you like some examples? Yes, the check engine light goes on. What do I do? I believe that if the check engine light goes on in my car, that's going to supersede any concerns that may have been cropping up in Congress today. If there's an inch of water on the basement floor and I can't figure out where it's coming from, that will supersede. You like that SAT word? That will supersede anything that might happen in Congress today. And there's Fred Bennett and Chris Oliveiro and Drew Anderson, my heroes, and Tim Sabian. Oh, my God. I have now divined what it takes to be a true friend, and I'll share that with you coming up later. But first, President Jimmy Carter died. And did I ever tell you my story about the time I spent with President Carter and Rosalynn? Let me share this with you. This is an amazing story, an event in my life. He had just left presidential office, and I was at the Kentucky Derby. At the time, I was working for ABC. Before, I was a talk show host of note. I was an executive of note. I wore wingtip shoes, Brooks Brothers suits. I was a wizard at PowerPoint. It was like, boom, boom, boom. I knew my PowerPoint, baby. I knew how to do the things that other people didn't know. Animations. How many times have you been in a PowerPoint and the speaker's going on, and then the animation freezes, and he or she has no idea how to fix it? That didn't happen to me. If you'd like to secretly know how to fix the PowerPoints, I'll tell you. No sweat. Because now I'm not a suit. I'm a talk show host. And I have no PowerPoint secrets anymore. It's no longer exclusive information, Alex. It's all about this. It's all about this show. My God. I was at the Kentucky Derby. ABC, the ABC Radio Network, carried the Kentucky Derby. It was carrying the Kentucky Derby, and for some reason, I was a big shot at ABC. I didn't give myself the job. Don't think I'm bragging. I have no idea how it happened. But I worked for a brilliant man named Edward McLaughlin, and Edward McLaughlin gave America the gift of Rush Limbaugh. Rush was on KFBK. Ed McLaughlin saw the ratings. He was leaving ABC. He said, oh, my gosh, and he decided to syndicate it. And in order to do that, he had to call in every favor he ever had. Every favor. That's a different story. Now I'm at the Kentucky Derby. And because it was ABC, I'm in the clubhouse. I'm in the clubhouse of the Kentucky Derby, you know, me, a guy from Jersey, and very excited. And all the women were beautiful. The minute a woman steps into Churchill Downs, what was the right preposition? Steps into Churchill Downs, she becomes beautiful. Beautiful hat, incredible Lilly Pulitzer creations. The skirts are amazing. Suddenly she has a Southern accent. What is sexier than a Southern accent? I know, for you, a Ukrainian accent. But at the time, a Southern accent was highly desirable. And there I am in the clubhouse. Now, in the clubhouse at the Kentucky Derby on any year, you're going to be surrounded by the most famous politicians, power brokers, bankers, and movie starlets imaginable. Every single person there except me was famous. Everybody. And the thing about the clubhouse of the Kentucky Derby that's really interesting is you don't go to the betting window. You don't go out and go to the betting window and stand with Stan and his cigar and, you know, a bunch of guys. Yeah, bet on that one. Yeah, bet on that one. No, you're in, it's a very genteel situation. Now, the track announcer, the broadcast announcer, the man who did the play-by-play of the race, he was in the clubhouse too, and he worked for ABC, and he was concerned about making me happy because he imagined I had power at ABC. I did not. Nobody had power at ABC except the show. Remind me to tell you about that. This was at a moment in time in the history of broadcasting when all that mattered was the play. The play was the thing. What was on the air is all that mattered. Most of those executives had a sign behind their desk that said, all that matters is what's on the air. All that matters is what's on the air. If I showed that to most media executives today, they would think it had to do with upgrading on United Airlines. They would have no idea what that was referring to because, well, in my spreadsheet here, I have to see more of an ROI before we can implement your wacky idea, Mr. Sterling. You have wacky ideas. I have to run the spreadsheet. I got algorithms. I've got this Wharton MBA here who's going to show me what to do. Good going, buddy. Nice work. America loves that. Well, I'm in the clubhouse. Surrounded by beauty, perfume, bourbon, beauty, perfume. And the track broadcaster, the man who did the play-by-play of the race for ABC, had taken my racing form. And he had circled each race, win, place, show. He had gone through each page of the racing form and circled who he thought was going to win, place, and show. And he would know. This was his life. This is what he knew. And I had my book there. I was looking at my racing form in the clubhouse of the Kentucky Derby. And there in the corner of my eye, I see President Jimmy Carter and Rosalynn Carter. They were in the corner of my eyes. I'm like, there's President Carter and Jimmy Carter. And he, being smart, saw that I had a marked racing form. And he knew what that meant because he had been president of the United States. They know everything. They know about the UFOs. They know about Bigfoot. Everything you and I care about. They know who killed Kennedy. Everything those guys know. Are they going to tell us? Well, I had a racing form that was marked. Maybe I had a chance. What he said to me next was a lot of pressure, and I'll share it with you, my Midnight Misfit, you. This is Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Save our dancers. Strippers on the loose, later. Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I tell you the real story of what goes on at Times Square during New Year's Eve. And it's not what you think. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Somebody's got a gun. Don't start a fight. The people of Walmart, later, Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling on Sunday. Inspired by TikTok.
Boy math is when they need to leave the house by 5 o'clock. So at 4:59, they're literally ready to go. Like, they're literally ready. They just need to hop in the shower super quick. But other than that, they're literally ready to go.
All right, you and I are driving across Route 80, up and down I-4, I-5. Welcome to Sterling every damn Sunday. It's a live radio show, and it's a pleasure to be with you, probably. I mean, I really don't know you. But it's the sort of thing hosts say, well, it's really good to be with you tonight. They have no idea. What they are looking forward to is the opportunity to leave and go get drunk. But not me. I look forward to, again, amassing giant ratings. But I digress. President Jimmy Carter passed away today at the age of 100, a respected, great man. And we are all grateful for the service that he did for the United States of America. I had the privilege of spending time with Jimmy Carter in a profound way. And I met him in the clubhouse of the Kentucky Derby the year after he left the presidency. I'm standing in the clubhouse of the Kentucky Derby with a racing form. Every race. But you see, at ABC, I was at ABC and ABC was carrying the race. At ABC, the person who broadcast the play-by-play of the race had seen my program and marked it. He had circled each race, what was going to come in first place show. He marked my racing form. And I was standing there looking out into the sea of beauty. It's magnificent. The opportunity just once in your life to see the crowd at the Kentucky Derby will confirm everything you love about our great country. It is just an American spectacle that's hard to beat. I was so honored to be there. I was so humbled to be there. I couldn't believe I was there. I'm surrounded by Lily Pulitzer outfits and incredible hats that seem to have come directly from the Queen of England. The perfume and the bourbon. Oh, my God. But out of the corner of my eye, I see President Jimmy Carter walking toward me, and his eye caught my racing form, and he saw that it was marked, and he knew what that meant. And Rosalind was nearby, but she wasn't with us yet. He comes up to me, and I introduce myself. He didn't have to introduce himself. He says, well, who are you going to bet on in the next race? Because he knew I had a racing form that was marked probably by somebody way more expert in this than me, Walter M. Sterling. He looks at it. I said, well, in this next race, Mr. President, I'm going to bet on this and this and this. All right. I go to the window, which is like a concierge window in the clubhouse. You're not down there with Sal and Vinny, who are, you know, smoking cigars. I make my bet. Race happens. And I won. President Carter sees this, places a bet on the next race. Who are you going to bet on now? Who are you going to bet on? I told him. All right, I'm going to do that too. Well, that's a lot of pressure. When the man who had the launch codes is taking your advice on how to bet his money, it's a risky spot to be in. And over there was Secret Service, and over there was Secret Service, but none of them were too close. Because it was the clubhouse at the Kentucky Derby, surrounded by movie stars, probably other presidents. But I had my president. My President Carter was with me. Okay. He bets his money. The race starts. Magnificent day at Churchill Downs. Could not have been better. 68 degrees. No humidity. Everybody was happy. Hadn't rained in days. Was not a wet track. It was great. We won. President Carter and I won. Oh, did I say it that way? Yeah. The president and I, we won. Meanwhile, I'm going off the tip of the broadcast play-by-play announcer who lived it. Great. He calls Rosalind over. Pressure increases. And he goes, Rosalind, this is my inside man. Oh, it's serious when Rosalind comes over. Really, Jimmy? What should we bet on the next race? And I told them, and we bet on it in the next race. And we won. Rosalind, Jimmy, and I, we're like a trio. We're experts at the race. We're doing terrific. we bet again. The race starts. Beautiful day. My boss, Ed McLaughlin, is looking like, don't say anything stupid, Walter. He just gave me that look that a parent would give. This was a powerful guy. He's president of the ABC radio network when that was something to be proud of and not something to be ashamed of. It was something to be proud of. 2,000 affiliates, American Top 40 with Casey Kasem, the Olympics, and the Kentucky Derby. Race starts. It goes. We won. Now the Carters and I, I'm practically adopted by the Carters. They're anxious to introduce me to Amy. And, okay, we're doing good. Next race. Roslyn, Jimmy, and I, we all bet on the same horses. The race starts. Now they're bringing around hors d'oeuvres. Mini hamburgers, you know those mini hamburgers at the Fancy Wasp parties. Mini hamburgers, mini hot dogs. I bet you there wasn't a pig in the blanket in that clubhouse. I would doubt that very much. And the race went, and they ran, and I'm betting on my bet, and the Carters are betting on my advice. Oh my God! And it lost. It lost. The horses lost. We didn't win. And before I could turn around and go, oh, well, you want to try again? Before I could say something friendly and engaging, they were gone. In a trail of embarrassment, they were gone. I was no longer his man. I was no longer the president's tipster on the Kentucky Derby. Mr. President and Roslyn had vanished, and that was it. But it was fun, and I think it's pretty much my only I know a president story, because Trump won't return my calls. I think it was pretty much the only one, but it was fun, and it was telling that a politician vanished the minute the winning ended. But it's all right. No resentment. I've got a great story out of it. And I am very sad that President Carter has passed away. And I'm very glad that his children adore him and are saying good things. And all the help he did with Habitat for Humanity, bravo. Well, we have a lot of other things to do tonight. As you can imagine, this is Sterling every damn Sunday. Every week from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. West Coast. Two men were looking for Bigfoot and they died. There's a giant sinkhole on Route 80 East. What? Yeah, a giant sinkhole on Route 80 East, 15 miles from the Delaware Water Gap. It's a shocking thing. A P.J. Clark's bartender, P.J. Clark's is a famous bar in New York City, and one of their women bartenders has filed harassment suits against her manager, who was a woman. And you and I will talk about what it means to be a loner and how that's a wonderful and a great thing. And Liam Payne, they came down with a verdict today that about 28 people were responsible for Liam Payne of One Direction's death. And I have a very different point of view about that. I'm like, really? You think those 20 people, including a manager at the hotel, had anything to do with Liam Payne's death? I don't think so. Plus, we have a brand new Florida story. I mean, James Parker has delivered us a brand new Florida story. We have people of Walmart. No other show covers Walmart. Walmart is the epicenter of our social life. Who talks about it but me? Nobody. And Strippers on the Loose. News from the strip clubs of North America. And weather on a Sunday night. For some reason, every other radio station does not think there's actually any weather anymore. They think it stops Friday at 5. That's to me, a very strange point of view. And I've got an email. It's waltermsterling@gmail.com. And I have a killer website. It's waltersterlingshow.com, waltersterlingshow.com. And you, Misfit, I'm glad you're here. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling at Night, inspired by Jenna Kim Jones.
I told my husband he could no longer watch Hallmark movies with me this year. Because he's always asking stupid questions. Like, haven't we seen this one already?
Past the hour with Walter M. Sterling every damn night. You and I are going to talk about the astonishing discovery of an abandoned mine shaft on Route 80 in Jersey. Oh my gosh, they build the road. Who knew there was a giant mine shaft there? And the name of the town is Mine Town. Unbelievable.
So it's time you get a good mic.
All right, it's time to get the latest information from Hollywood, the land of sexo, the land of no brassieres, everything you and I fantasize about. From Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood.
Boom Boom Hollywood, Sterling every damn night.
There you are, Mateus. Are you thrilled to be on Sterling every damn night?
I am certainly thrilled to be here, and what a great story about Churchill Downs. Man, that must have been a moment to remember.
It was such an honor, and I was so conflicted because I just wanted to jump up and down and say, oh my gosh, look who's talking to me. But, you know, I had to be cool because it was the President of the United States. And sure enough, you know, everything was going fine as long as we were winning.
But no lox and bagels, just those waspy burgers, huh?
Waspy burgers and canapes. Canapes.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's supposed to be very elegant there with top hats and hats by Dashé and all those things. Well, what a marvelous experience. I only see that in the movies, and of course, we're talking about movies tonight. And, Walter, this is the time of year, as we get close to the end of 2024, where I look at the 110 movies that I've actually sat through, some of which are 2 hours I can never get back, and some I actually remember. You know, I see three movies a week, and if you ask me what I saw last week, I have to scratch my head or look at my appointment calendar because they're that memorable. But once in a while, maybe 10 stand out, and I thought we'd take a look at some of those movies tonight.
All right. What are your top 10 for 2024? Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood.
Let's go in reverse order, starting with number 10. Here is number 10. It's The Bike Riders from Focus Features. This is sort of an updated The Wild One, directed by Jeff Nichols with Austin Butler, Tom Hardy, Michael Shannon. It was beautifully photographed, a solid movie. I didn't want to like it. I really liked it, and I liked it especially because Julie Comer was just, she knocked it out of the park. She was fantastic as the love interest to Austin Butler. So that's number 10 in the top 10 movies of 2024. Going now to number 9, a movie we've yet to talk about because it will actually be released next week. But it was so solid when I saw it a couple of weeks ago. And it's Better Man from Paramount, which is directed by Michael Gracey. And this is the 9th. Best movie of the year, as we're talking about the top 10. This is a biopic of Robbie Williams. Now, Robbie Williams is a British pop star, who total rock and roll star. He was in a boy band called Take That from 1995 on, and then in 1996 he went solo, and he lived like a rock star. You know, wild parties, swimming pools, beautiful girls, drugged out of his mind like rock stars are. And this is depicted in this movie, which was completely engaging, fast-moving, great choreography, thoroughly entertaining, a real solid entertainment, but it has one really weird aspect. And that is that the character played by Robbie Williams, in other words, the person playing him is not a person, but an actor doing a CGI modeling for a chimpanzee. I'm not making this up. Robbie Williams is played by a CGI chimpanzee because Williams feels in the music industry, you're like a trained monkey on a stick because you have to do the same song over and over and over and over again, being taken advantage of by agents and managers, etc. And so you think this is a ludicrous concept. But believe it or not, this chimpanzee thing, once you get over the initial shock, it's still a great movie. So that is number 9 in the top 10 movies, going to number 8 for 2024, The Young Woman in the Sea from Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures. This is the story of Gertrude Erdely from New York. She was the first woman to swing the English Channel in 1926. Daisy Ridley plays her. And I don't like Disney movies because they always want to make it a politically correct lesson and put in all these examples that don't make sense for historical drama. But this time, they did it right, and they stayed away from the BS and told a great story about an intrepid woman, and it was fabulous. Young Woman in the Sea, number 8 in the top 10. Number 7, we talked about recently, Nosferatu, a horror film, remake of a silent movie, Nicholas Hoult, Lily Rose Depp, Bill Skarsgård, and Willem Dafoe, and it's a really great reimagining of that old movie. So well done, you think it's its own new movie. And number 6, The Room Next Door. This is the 6th best movie of 2024 from Sony Pictures Classics. The great Pedro Almodovar directs. Tilda Swinton, who has cancer in this movie, her girlfriend, played by Julianne Moore, finds out and wants to spend time with her. And then Tilda Swinton has a real big ask of her, and that is to be in the room next door as things diminish. Very powerful movie for adults, brilliantly made.
Well, now, wait a second. Now, hold on a second. This is very dramatic and very important that Boom Boom Hollywood is giving his top 10 for 2024. I believe in something called, are you ready? There's a technical term. Keep them wanting more. Therefore, let's hold it there, Boom Boom, and give
let's
the top 5 in about an hour, at about 35 past the next hour. Does that work for you?
Oh, man, that's so great. It's just like the old movie serials. You have to come to the theater the next week, but you don't have to wait all week. Just an hour right here on Sterling on Sunday.
How does somebody find you on Facebook?
Matias Bombals Hollywood, MatiasBombal Hollywood on Facebook. MatiasBombal Hollywood on Facebook. I thank you, Walter, and we'll chat in an hour.
All right, thank you, sir.
So it's time you get a good mic.
Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. This is Sterling Every Damn Sunday. I want to thank WGAN in Maine for being our newest affiliate. And it's a great station. It's owned by Saga Broadcasting, SAGA. It's run by one of my very favorite general managers and program directors. And they say they've already seen an improvement on their Sunday night numbers, which makes me very happy. Phil, I thank you, and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. It's an exciting show, isn't it? The worst thing that can happen to us is having in-laws, and I'll discuss how serious a problem this is coming up in seconds. You and I are going to hear the terrible fate of two guys going out, Phil Zachary, two guys going out to look for Bigfoot, and they died. How that happened, details in just seconds. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Lesbians in space. In space.
I hooked up with this girl, and I woke up and was like, pretty calm about it. And that also felt like a click to me of like, wow, I'm not freaking out.
Yeah.
And I always thought I would if this moment came. I think I had anticipated it and all those small moments leading up to it. And then when it actually happened, it was almost like the other shoe dropped. Like, we're good.
Yeah.
Like, we've been waiting for the other shoe to drop for so long, and like it happened, and like everything's fine.
Walter, on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to talk a little bit about what it's like for an NYPD cop to work Times Square on New Year's Eve. So unlike what you see on television, it's not all nice and everyone's having a good time down there. First, NYPD cops have to get to their precinct probably about 2-3 o'clock, and then you got a carpool down. And you dress up and you put on your uniform. It's usually what they call hats and bats, which is helmets and nightsticks, because people throw bottles and stuff down there. And you're putting on a bunch of sweatshirts, so you kind of look like Robbie in A Christmas Story. But then once you get down to Manhattan, you can't park near any of the police stations because they have minimal parking. So good luck finding a parking spot. You throw your permit in the window and you pray to God that Department of Traffic doesn't tow or ticket your car. Then once you get down there, you hope you have a supervisor that'll put you on his roster. You line up in groups of eight, and then it's the luck of the draw. You could get a great supervisor to watch you, or you could get a pain-in-the-butt supervisor. And what I mean is, if you have a good supervisor, what he's going to do is, he's going to tell you if it's cold or raining out, okay, I got eight guys. You four guys stay out here and watch the crowd. You four guys go into a building and warm up. But if you got a guy that's shaky, he's going to keep you out there all night, and you're going to freeze to death. Well, you usually get your meal hour probably about 4 or 5 o'clock. They tell you, okay, come back in an hour. So now you're not really hungry, but now you're forced to find something to eat, and good luck with that. So it's usually a fast food place. You're not going to be going to Gallagher's Steakhouse or one of those expensive eateries in the theater district. From there, after about 6 o'clock, you're on post and you're watching these people that are hoarded into these pens, as they're called, where they're like cattle. And there are no bathrooms for the public to use because the restaurants in that neighborhood have had their bathrooms trashed before. And they're not going to let anybody inside their restaurant unless you've got a reservation. Well, you're in there and you're hit with countless questions. Drunks crying, I got felt up, I got my pocket picked. You're there taking reports all night. Well, when the ball drops, that's when the fun begins. People start throwing things. The crowd starts getting a little unruly. But what happens is you got the hood rats from the five boroughs that pop up out of the train. They're sober as judges. And what they do is, after we start breaking down the barriers and the sanitation department is cleaning up the confetti, they start robbing people. So now you've got people running up to you. I lost my cell phone. I lost my chain. I lost my diamond ring. Good luck with that. And then we wind up taking report. So my advice to everyone is, stay home on New Year's Eve and don't go down to Times Square. For more behind the scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD Presumption and Dysfunction.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Save our dancers. Strippers on the loose later. Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Somebody's got a gun. Don't start a fight. The people of Walmart later. Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling at night, inspired by a single guy.
Whenever I meet a pretty girl, the first thing I look for is intelligence. Because if she doesn't have that, then she's mine.
All right, look at that. It's 10:53 on the East Coast, 7:53 on the West Coast. Walter M. Sterling, live, live, live. This is a live radio show. It's not one of those embarrassments known as a best of. What the hell is that? How is it possible for a spoken word show that takes phone calls at 855-839-1210? How is it possible for a show that you and I can call into and talk to each other live? How is it any good if you can't call in? These are the mysteries.
So it's time you get a good mic.
There is JB Bakery, Stephen and Selena. Welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Hi, guys.
Feel the dough, eat the dough, JB Bakery, Selena and Steve, Sterling every damn night.
Now, you're in a relatively new relationship. You're not married yet. Have the holidays tested your relationship? Have dealing with the in-laws tested your relationship?
Hey, Walter. Happy New Year to you. We're still enjoying the holidays, and I was with Selena's parents today, and we're having a great time, and all's going well. So, and Selena got to spend Christmas Day with my parents as well, so you could hear her side of the story, as you know, ask her.
Did Stephen's parents drink too much?
No, I don't think anybody drank too much. That didn't seem to be a problem this year. I mean, maybe my grandfather, I think, would be the one that drank the most. But I don't think anybody had any alcohol issues.
Selena of JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. Did any of the distant relatives ask you anything embarrassing about your relationship with Steven, as in, oh, do you two live together?
I mean, they didn't ask that. I did get a couple of questions that were a little embarrassing. I mean, I just feel like it being a midnight misfit, the longer you spend around family, there just becomes a point in the night where it just is too much and you're ready to go. Like, you know, it's great seeing everybody and everything, but I was ready to just go and be by myself after seeing everyone, you know, in a span of 2 days, especially one day with my family and then with his. It's just a little overwhelming.
How long did you have to stay after you hit that point of no return? How long did it continue after, in your head, you're like, I got to get out of here?
Several hours.
Yes. All right, Selena, Steven, you're my favorites. They run JB Bakery, a real bakery, a grandmother-type bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. And they always bring us a great recipe that you and I can actually make. Rarely does it involve parchment paper. What's the recipe tonight, Steven?
Hey, Walter. I always enjoy making Christmas cookies and, you know, shoving those off onto family members to avoid the, you know, trying questions that are always thrown at me. But Selena did awesome at Christmas. She's amazing. I like making these authentic Italian pizzelles. I think everybody should have them during a holiday. And I like them at New Year's because I remember, like, walking through in Philly on the Italian market and remember having these. And somehow they always remind me of New Year's. And I saw a lot of these in my shop. Authentic Italian pizzelles. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with them. Maybe they have a grandmother that has an old recipe that she won't let go of, and that's her thing that she makes every year. I know Selena has a grandmother like that. But these recipes are...
Say the name of the product again, because I'm slow and I didn't understand it. Slowly, what's the name of the product?
Pizzelle. It's a pizzelle. It's a flat cookie. It's almost like ice cream cone before it gets rolled up into a cone shape.
I got it.
Yeah.
So it's a simple recipe. You can get it by sending me a note at waltermsterling@gmail.com. I will happily send you the pizzelle. Is that right? Pizzelle?
Pizzelle, yeah.
Pizzelle so recipe from JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Selena and Steve, I'm glad you got through the holidays, but I think you need to be a little more sensitive to when Selena needs to leave your relatives who are probably more annoying than you can even imagine, Stephen. Thank you for being on Sterling every damn night. Stephen and Selena, JB Bakery, Burlington, New Jersey. Guess what? They're on this show because I like them. They don't buy the time. It's not paid for. It's just great to have two young people making original baked goods, owning a business, running a business. I'm just really proud of them. JB Bakery in Burlington, New Jersey.
So it's time you get a good mic.
I've been thinking about getting a new mic. And those of you who suffer from being radio, do you know which microphone I have? I have an RCA 77. I also have that Electro Voice, whatever, that everybody else uses. All right, here it is. I'll tell you what it says. I never remember. Yeah, okay. And but I use an RCA 77D. And nobody else uses this. They're all afraid to use it, but not me, you know, because I'm brave enough to just say whatever the heck I think of. I'm Walter M. Sterling. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Good evening, Walter M. Sterling, Sterling every damn Sunday. Yes, it's a live radio show with weather.
More news, more news. Day and night around the clock, it's your news. You get it all when you set your dial to Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night. Sterling every damn night.
Oh my gosh, look at this. It's 8 minutes past the hour. 18-wheelers on I-4, I-80, or the Luge, I-90. Why does anybody live there? in upstate New York, all very depressing. Never understood that. I get a lot of email. I get a lot of mail from you. Let me open up one of these now.
Why do you keep giving out the phone number for people to call? Hardly anyone ever calls in. Use the story of the woman with the hairy legs again. I've already heard it twice. Are you working so much to make up for lost time for being out of work for so long? Listening to your show in a continuous loop would be a good torture for a prisoner of war.
855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. All emails are welcome and will probably wind up on the air. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. And you can use that to ask for that recipe that we just got from JB Bakery. Wasn't that fantastic? I thought so. There's this new work trend. I don't really understand it. It's called coffee blending.
Coffee badging is the moniker that's being applied to one trick that workers are using, and that is showing up at the office in the morning, getting a cup of coffee, standing around very prominently so managers can see you in the office doing your thing, and then at the first instance you get, you slip out and head back home and do the rest of your work by remote. That's coffee badging. Oh. Variations of this would be coming in on days when you know there's not going to be a lot of people around, maybe a Monday or a Friday, putting in maybe 20 minutes, coffee badge a little bit, and then split. There's various ways to play it, and here's the downside. Managers are getting savvy about this. They figured out that people are starting to coffee badge, so what are they doing in response? They're walking the halls, especially in the afternoons, looking to see who is around. They might even summon you to their office on the fly just to see if you're around to respond. Those are ways that are doing it, but here's the key way that coffee badging and other such gaming is being countered, and that is more and more managers are simply rewarding people who are around. In other words, if you want a promotion, if you want other perks, well, it's the people who are there who are going to get it. In fact, one recent survey of CEOs found that 90% say that they will give all the plum assignments only to the workers they see at the office on a regular basis.
Yeah. Listen, remember all of the promises of the future? All the promises of the future about computerization, how the computers were going to come into the workplace, they were going to save us time. That was the purpose. Oh, the computer will do all of these dumb tasks. All right, the computers are here, and they can do dumb tasks. As a result, the fact is, the 40-hour work week was an arbitrary amount, and it had more to do with hat factories and farms than it had to do with thought industry, advertising, accounting, banking, thought industry, idea industry. There are very few jobs that actually take on a regular basis 40 hours a week, very few. And in order to fill the 40 hours, a lot of people have to look very busy when, in fact, it doesn't really take them 40 hours to get things done. And it's not supposed to, because now it's the future. We're living in the future. All the promises of computers and how technology will cut down on our workload, it's happened. Throw in the pandemic. You and I found out it was easy to work at home. We could get exactly the same stuff done at home in much less time. Why did it take less time at home? Well, because we didn't have to talk to old Charlie. And we didn't have to compromise on getting along. We didn't have to deal with HR training films. But remember, that's a small percentage of us. Most of us drive trucks. Most of us make deliveries. United Parcel, FedEx, the post office. Most of us either work alone in the car doing deliveries or on a construction site or in a retail store. The majority of Americans work in businesses with 10 or fewer employees. The boss knows if you're there. You work in a hair salon, a barber shop. You have to be there or you make no money. This is for a very rarefied group of people who work in big corporations with fancy suits, really good air conditioning, snack bars. Boy, let me tell you about a snack bar. Our show comes out of Odyssey, the best company with the worst name, Odyssey Media in Philadelphia. And I have never seen a physical plant this beautiful. It's insane. but the break rooms would put most cafeterias to shame. Would put them to shame, I'll tell you.
So it's time you get a good mic.
The break rooms have two pristine refrigerators, two vending machines. And ladies and gentlemen, it's 13 past the hour on a Sunday night. I have bulletin for you. The vending machines are always full. This never happens. Vending machines get empty an hour after the guy comes and fills it. And then, and I'm going to tell you something that really could cause a riot if it was known generally about our facility at 2400 Marcus Street in Philadelphia. Down the hall, past the sales department, past KYW, all news radio for Philadelphia, very serious people, only the grown-ups get to work at KYW. There is a floor-to-ceiling display of Tasty Cakes. Every Tasty Cake product made is on that display. Take all you want. I will confess, as will Alex, that we have taken bags, empty bags, from home and filled them up with Tasty Cake products. That's what it's for. Isn't that what it's for? Okay. It's incredible. I couldn't be happier at this facility. But that's not the way it is in the real world. This is fantasy land. You know, this is WIP goes around eating people's arms, those people. The scam of looking busy in order to keep your job, that's in very few places. But let me tell you, I have worked in places that are very busy, have a lot of executives who have undefined jobs, undefined hours. And let me tell you some of the tricks I know about looking busy. You ready? First, know when the real boss gets to work. If you're there and the real boss isn't there, it doesn't matter if you're there. It only matters if you're there when the real boss is there, whoever that may be. Find out when they get in. At one of my consulting clients, the curse was the real boss got there at 6 in the morning. And I'm not exactly a morning person. I'm happiest right now. But there was Mel, 6 in the morning, and I'd walk past that office. Good morning, how you doing? I made damn sure he knew I was there. And then there was another CEO who always walked the floor on Sundays. He showed up on Sundays and just did a once around the floor to see who was there on Sunday. When I learned that, I made damn sure I was there on Sundays at the exact moment that he walked around. It doesn't matter if you're there when the boss isn't there. It only matters if you're there when the boss is there. Then, the other part of looking busy is look busy. Walk very fast. Carry coffee, but walk very fast. And if you're wearing a jacket, man or woman, take the jacket off. Don't have the jacket on. Look like you're going to do a presentation. You know, you've got a lot of papers under your arm. Very important. And then don't eat at your desk. There's a dumb thing people do where they eat at their desk to look busy. Don't do that. Smartest thing you can do is go to lunch with a colleague. You want to gain power in your company? What you do is you identify people who you think have a good trajectory and go up to them and say, hey, Susan, you want to go to lunch tomorrow? Let's just go grab a bite and talk about business. And you go with Susan for a half-hour lunch, and you have a bite, and you talk about business, and here's the rule. Only say incredibly good things about the company. Give Susan no reason to gossip about anything you say, and you don't have a home life. Don't talk about your kids, your cat, trouble with your mother-in-law, nothing. You talk about business and some ideas that you have, and try to sell some ideas and see how your colleagues take to them. That's how you get to be a big shot. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Every damn night, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Story. Thank you. Thank you, crowd.
This is a weird one, man. I'm so old that death doesn't really scare me as much as how am I going to die? That's what I want. I understand I'm going to die. Am I going to die quietly, peacefully in my sleep, just go to sleep, never wake up? Is it going to be like a fiery car crash? Am I going to die slowly over the course of the next 18 months battling cancer? Or am I going to go out like the 65-year-old Florida man named Brian? Brian is at Hilton Beetle. It's a golf course, and he's about to tee off on the first hole. Some 36-year-old guy who I don't think he even knows, but he came up. He grabbed one of the clubs out of his bag and hit him with it. And the 65-year-old, ow, that hurt. He tried to run off, but I guess a 65-year-old's not going to outrun a 36-year-old. The 36-year-old chased him down, still holding that club, and finally caught him, knocked him down, and beat him to death on the edge of one of the ponds. And so, they're both in the water, and he's beating with the club. And at some point, and they say he was probably already dead when this happened, but he tries to pick the guy up by the neck and choke him. And they are both, he's like waist deep in the water at this point, choking a dead guy now. And so a whole slew of people called 911, and the cops show up. And by the time the cops show up, this man had taken off all of his clothes and then just walked into the woods. You know, like Joe Biden did a couple weeks ago in the Amazon, just disappeared into the forest butt naked. The cops were able to go into the forest and find him. What do they call that? An electric restraint device or whatever? It just seemed like some gobbledygook speak for a taser. So is that how I want to go out? Put me down for a maybe on that, you know? If I'm geriatric, if I only have a few good years left anyway, and they're like, James, would you rather die slowly over the next, you know, 2 years? Well, getting chemotherapy and radiation, your hair's falling out and you're puking and you're disintegrating into nothing. Or how about one day you're just teeing off in the first box and some guy comes and whacks you in the head and you don't remember a thing? That's up there. I'm not saying I'm choosing that, but, you know, if I would choose that over the cancer. I don't know. I'm thinking a hard maybe.
Wait,
Hold my beer.
Stay tuned. Part two of Florida Stories is right around the corner. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Sterling on Sunday. Coming up.
Save our dancers. Strippers on the loose. Later. Sterling. Every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I tell you the real story of what goes on at Times Square during New Year's Eve. And it's not what you think. Coming up in moments on Sterling Every Damn Night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Somebody's got a gun. Don't start a fight. The people of Walmart. Later, Sterling Every Damn Night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by worthless podcasts.
Hey guys, here's a couple tricks that'll help you when you're growing tomatoes this year.
Oh my gosh, Walter M. Sterling. Sterling Every Damn Sunday, a live radio show from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. coast to coast. Route 80 is a free part of the federal highway system in the state of New Jersey and in Pennsylvania. And it goes from the Delaware Water Gap to the George Washington Bridge. It is therefore an important artery. About 15 miles east of the Delaware Water Gap, this week on Thursday, a heavily trafficked day, about 100 yards of the highway collapsed into the ground. It created a sinkhole. About 100-yard sinkhole under the highway. And what was it? It's a mine. It's an abandoned mine. And throughout the area are abandoned mine shafts. And this one was right under Route 80, 15 miles east of the Delaware Water Gap, a heavily traveled road. Nobody was hurt. Nobody was killed. They were very lucky. They were able to close off the area and detour people on the worst rural local roads, the worst two-lane highways in the world that take you through the dairy farms and the scary parts of New Jersey that people don't talk about, the deliverance parts of New Jersey. Right. You go through these parts of New Jersey and you're going to be convinced that a flat tire is life-threatening because people will come up from those abandoned barns. Oh, my gosh, it's not really abandoned. And those carts those farm carts, those tractors that look rusted out and not being used, oh, they're actually being used. Well, please tell me how it is possible that a federally funded highway with big deal federal highway engineers and federally paid concrete pourers and blacktop makers and line painters and landscapers all happened to build this road right over an abandoned mine. And when you look, it isn't like it collapsed 10 feet down. It looks like it was about 2 feet from the surface of the highway. And of course, it'll take months of no-show jobs and no-work jobs to fix this. Months. I can't imagine how they could build a highway there and not notice that there were giant mine shafts that were abandoned. Even better, I believe the town is called like Mining Village, New Jersey. Everybody who lives in that area, and people have called me about it, Midnight Misfits have called, and they've said everybody knew there were mines there. Everybody knew there were abandoned mine shafts there. It was no secret. We all knew it. Well, how come the road engineers didn't do it? Or did that take money and time to circumvent those mines, to move the road to maybe, 100 feet one way or the other to avoid the mine shafts? There it is. A giant hole in Federal Highway 80, 15 miles from the Delaware Water Gap, in the densely populated state of New Jersey, 14 million people. On a holiday weekend, maybe the busiest day of the year for that road. Thank God nobody was hurt or killed, but how does this possibly happen? How could it happen that, there was hundreds of mine shafts right there. We forgot to look at those maps. And they want me to call them when I want to dig in my backyard to notify me of gas lines, to let me know if there are gas lines before I dig in my backyard. Here's a tip. Check the maps before you build a federal interstate. Sterling every damn Sunday.
Sterling at Night, inspired by Eliza Schlesinger.
I didn't know an Acura came with a time capsule. You just shut it. It's our little filthy secret stockpile, right? It's now that's what I call music CD.
In case they come back.
Yeah, it's one of those cables that plugs from the tape player into the CD player. It's a spilled nail polish. It's like a little bit of weed dust. It's a Calgon body spray because you'd rather smell like a stripper than weed, right?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's 37 past the hour as we drive across the country in our 18-wheeler. 18-wheelers always get preference. Call at any time. You'll get right on the air at 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. We're counting down the top 10 movies of the year with Matea Boom Boom from Hollywood.
Boom Boom Hollywood, stirring every damn night.
And now, Mateus, the top five movies, according to you, my friend, the top five movies of 2024. Ghost.
Well, yes, and in reverse order, number five is The Promised Land from Magnolia Pictures, a somewhat bleak movie where Mads Mikkelsen is a Danish soldier in the 18th century who, by order of the Danish king, has to cultivate Denmark's wild Jutland where nothing has ever grown. He faces every hardship until he finds that potatoes can grow, and it creates a boom of wealth for his king and countrymen. Now, why? Bleak movies are not fun for me, but this really transported me to another time and place, and I love it when movies do that. that. Number four in the top five movies of 2024 is September 5 from Paramount Pictures. This is set in the ABC Sports Control Room at the Munich Olympics of 1972, and it shows the coverage of the Israeli athletes that were kidnapped by terrorists.
ABC Sports
had to wrangle the story away from ABC News and negotiate for additional satellite time because all the rest of the world media there was, you know, had certain amount of hours they could be on the satellite to send signal around the globe, and they managed to steal that, keep covering the story with Peter Jennings at the scene. It's absolutely nail-biting, even though when you know what happens, this is just really well-made. Peter Skarsgård, Ben Chaplin, John Magaro plays the director wrangling the control room and all the crazy stuff they had to do to keep that story on the air. It is nail-biting and fabulous. That's the fourth best movie of the year.
What's the name of that movie again? The ABC Olympic movie.
It's September 5.
Wow.
September 5.
That's on it's my great. List. Heck, I'm not going to work tomorrow. I'm going to watch that movie. Go ahead, Boom Boom. Sorry.
Not a problem. It's great. You'll love it. Conclave is number 3 from Focus Features. This is the backstabbing and machinations in the election of a pope, with Ralph Fiennes as the cardinal tasked with hurting the cardinals, including Stanley Tucci, John Lithgow, and a short but Oscar-worthy performance from Isabella Rossellini. That's number 3 in the best movies of the year. Number 2, Day of the Fight, the redemption story of a pugilist played by Michael C. Pitt that, after being released from the pokey for vehicular manslaughter, must have one more winning fight, and if he wins, he'll be able to right many wrongs. Joe Pesci plays his dad. His uncle's played by Steve Buscemi. Ron Perlman is his trailer. Solid movie all around. It's the first movie directed by Jack Huston from the famous Huston movie family. Of course, we include Walter Huston and John Huston, director, and Angelica Huston. So that is Day of the Fight, the second best movie of the year. And the best movie of 2024.
Wait. Hold on. We have to get the fanfare going here.
All right.
What is the best movie of the year, sir?
Juror number 2 from Warner Brothers. Clint Eastwood's most recent and hopefully not last movie, about a juror played by Nicholas Holt, who has a big moral decision to make when he finds out that he may have been involved in the murder case that's being heard and struggles whether he should or should not reveal his possible involvement. Zoe Deutsch, J.K. Simmons, Toni Collette, and performances that make for the best movie of the year, which is only shown in 50 theaters, but you can see it now on HBO Max. That's Juror number 2, the best movie of 2024.
Mateus Boom Boom Hollywood, thank you very much for being an important part of Sterling every damn night. I realized at some point in creating this really unusual radio show, and by the way, we're accused of being a very sticky radio show, and I suppose that could go either way. You know, in terms of the internet, calling something sticky is a positive, but in my mother's house, calling something sticky was definitely not a positive. I never know where to take that compliment. But you're a very important part of the show, my friend. I realized we needed to have a Hollywood perspective. We needed to have an entertainment perspective. And you fill the bill, and I am grateful for you. Thank you very much.
I thank you and wish you the very best in the new year, and that very same sentiment to all the stations that carry this great program, and most importantly, our beloved Midnight Misfit listening right now.
Thank you, Mateus. It's 42 past the hour. Coming up, you and I are going to talk about these two guys who went looking for Bigfoot. They went looking for Bigfoot and died. And we'll talk about this interesting story of a very attractive female bartender at a very well-established, famous bar in New York City who was harassed in clearly inappropriate ways by her manager. And who was her manager? Was her manager Ralph? Was her manager Frank? No. Her manager was a woman. And we'll talk about that in just seconds. And more importantly, the horror of dealing with in-laws at this time of year. What is a greater test of our marriage and our sanity and our consumption of eggnog than dealing with our in-laws at this time of year? Walter M. Sterling, I have an email. Every email gets answered. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. WalterMSterling@gmail.com. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
Want to get drunk? What's the occasion? It's Tuesday. Hi, fair enough. Let's go. Psst. Want to get drunk? What's the occasion? It's Tuesday. Hi, fair enough. Let's go. Psst. Want to get drunk? What's the occasion? It's Tuesday. Hi, fair enough. Let's go.
It's the deep of Walmart on Sterling and I.
I'm all about the Second Amendment. I like the First Amendment, too. Freedom of speech is good. Right to bear arms. I'm just big into what those powdered wig fellers had to say. Walmart, Valdosta, Georgia. Yeah, three individuals got into a fight. And one of them was walking through the Walmart with a rifle. Shamarian Morrison, he's 17. Artist Thomas, 30, began to fight physically. Cops had to come in and separate them. L.C. Strotter was walking through the Walmart carrying a rifle. Let me give you a couple of gun safety tips. This works at Walmart or anywhere else. Guns are a tool. They're a very serious thing. If you're involved with a fight while having a gun, things generally just don't go that well. The other time not to have a gun in use or in your hands is after you've had a few drinks. I was at a cabin not that long ago in beautiful Traverse City, Michigan. Just a beautiful place. And there was a kegger, hot dogs, brats. Someone made sloppy joes, which generally is not that good for a picnic type of thing, but here we are. All of a sudden, someone went to their car and pulled out a shotgun, a sawed-off shotgun, and decided to shoot it willy-nilly. That is dangerous as heck. I'm just glad that no one was shot at this Walmart. I'm glad that three people have been arrested, and perhaps there could be a cooling down period. No word on whether anyone was intoxicated. It was only 4:45 in the afternoon, so perhaps they were just coming home after a long day of work, and this particular Walmart is, you know, a dangerous one. It's just better to be armed. I don't know. I don't know the answer. I'm trying to be a man of peace. Your Walmart blue-vested heroes, largest corporation in the world, should not be breaking up gunfights. The job doesn't pay that well, but they're heroes nonetheless. For the people of Walmart, this is Velo Hool, Sterling, every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Save our dancers. Strippers on the loose, later. Sterling, every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari, and on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I tell you the real story of what goes on at Times Square during New Year's Eve, and it's not what you think. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling every damn night. Inspired by teenage daughters.
My daughter's in college. It's $63,000 a year to send this kid to college. $63,000. Yes. For those of you with daughters, you will not be offended when I say that it is worth every penny to get the miserable human being out of my house.
51 past the hour with Walter M. Sterling. Good evening. It's a holiday time. I love driving at this time of night, especially on a holiday, especially if I'm driving through parts of the country that have a little snow, not a lot of snow. It's romantic. It's beautiful. And what the day people don't understand, Keith Mortensen, what the day people don't understand is we would much prefer to work now, and we'd much prefer to work alone. And you and I can never explain this adequately. Don't you want to work in the day? No. In fact, I was just asked that. If X, Y, and Z happened, wouldn't you want to work in the day? No. No, because to me, noon is plenty early. Mike, you're at 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. I am so proud of you. Mike here sent me a really long, nice email. And Mike is a senior citizen who decided to go back to college. And he's been very successful. He's on the dean's list. And he's taken a tough course. Why don't you tell us about that and what it's like to be back in school? Welcome to Sterling on Sunday. Hi. Hello.
Oh.
Yeah, you, buddy. Wake up.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no. He said dean's list and all that. I had no idea that Walter saw that. Thank you.
Why wouldn't I see that? Listen, why wouldn't I see that? When you send me an email at waltermsterling@gmail.com, I read every email and I say I'm going to read them and answer them, and I really do, and I'm grateful for them because it keeps me smart about what you want to hear. You know, it's very easy for a guy like me to go off on little tangents of things that amuse me and would never amuse you. And so I am grateful. And you, worse than that, you have beautifully written emails. You're a very articulate guy. So thank you for those emails.
My pleasure and my honor.
Tell me about your college experience.
Oh, well, okay. So my college experience is 64 credits with a community college, having done electrical engineering and hearing aid, and done with eyeglass. I have a degree in, eyeglasses, and so anyhow, I guess I'm just taken aback because I didn't realize you saw my emails. But anyhow, I had really called in because of my driving on Route 80.
Yes, you're driving on Route 80. And you saw the sinkhole? Did you see the sinkhole?
No, I did not. It's funny. You say root. I say route. You know, potato, yeah. Potatoes.
Right. No, I'm thinking, how did my parents say it in Jersey? They said Route 80. That's what they would have said. And you say route. It's fine. It's okay. It's America. Yeah. We're in America, buddy.
Well, I was, this was 1976. Yeah, 1976. I had just got my driver's license, and in New Jersey, and was going to take a road trip out to Chicago, Illinois, and I didn't want to pay a penny to that so-called toll road, and didn't think it was worth it. Well, the problem that I didn't realize was that I was driving a 1962 Volkswagen Beetle. And the Beetle, the engine, was in pretty bad shape. It was dripping oil and everything else. But the point is that even if it was in good shape, it was only 42 horsepower at its best. And I know, Walter, you would appreciate this.
Yeah, because I don't think I've ever
had... heard about your Cadillac your other car escapades.
Yeah. I was the proud owner of a 1962 Sedan DeVille and the proud owner of a 1963 Dodge Dart. Let me tell you, those are state of the art. Tell me the end of your story, Chief. Tell me the end of your story.
Well... Needless to say that there are no tunnels. So therefore, you are going uphill. And I had three passengers with luggage and dripping oil, so that I had to carry a carton of oil.
Yeah.
And in those days, you had to pop the... I forget what you call it, but into the nozzle. You had to pop a nozzle into it. There was no such thing as just turning this, you know, corkscrew. And anyhow, semis were behind us honking at us. You know, we were completely boxed in with semi tractor trailers all around us, and there was one girl in the car, you know, two of us guys,
and
but
she,
one girl,
and she was crying.
Terrified.
Yeah, she was terrified.
Totally terrified.
Hey, listen, thank you. Thank you for this story. Thank you very much for being on Sterling Every Damn Night at 855-839-1210. It was one of those special rides where you're using more oil than gasoline. It's one of those special cars that you only have in high school that uses more oil than gasoline. You got to keep a box of oil in the back of the car. I appreciate that story at 855-839-1210 with Walter M. Sterling. And yes, I do answer every email at waltermsterling@gmail.com. And tonight, you can get a great recipe from JB Bakery just for saying, hey, Walter, send me the great recipe from JB Bakery. And I can't pronounce what it is, but it's some yummy sort of Italian thing. I keep telling Stephen, simple. Make sure it's simple. Make sure you don't need parchment paper. And it seems that you like his recipes. Coming up in just seconds, two men who died looking for Bigfoot. Sterling Every Damn Night.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Coming up in just seconds, we're going to find out about two guys who died looking for Bigfoot. Now, Dr. Dave's weather.
Sterling Every Night, lost in space. Mission Control, Dave Scott.
Oh my gosh, look at that. It's Dave Scott, a known Canadian. Soon it's going to be a state of the United States. Did you see this incredible story, Mr. Scott, about two guys looking for Sasquatch and they died?
Yeah, we're actually following that story quite closely on Spaced Out Radio. One of my Bigfoot gentlemen, Lee Strauss, knows that area very well where this incident happened. And it is absolutely incredible. Now, do I think Bigfoot got him? No, I don't. But I guess we should fill the audience in on what happened here.
Exactly. So Dave Scott, could you, yes, please, start from scratch. Share with us what happened.
On Christmas Day, two guys who go looking for Bigfoot in southwestern Washington decided that they were going to go out and skip some time with family while they had some time before dinner to go out looking for Sasquatch near Mount Adams in Washington State. One gentleman was 59 years old, the other one was 37. They didn't return. And all of a sudden, the family got worried. They called in search and rescue and the police, who went looking for them. And 3 days later, they were found deceased in the forest. Now, we don't know their names. We don't know exactly what happened to them. There is rumors right now and speculation that it was they were caught in the elements and could not stay warm, and they basically froze to death, which can happen in those areas as temperatures in the mountains in those areas definitely getting into, you know, below freezing levels, that's for sure. And where Sasquatch comes in, of course, is we don't know the identities of these gentlemen just yet. We're waiting to try and find that out, is what happened. They didn't make it back to their vehicle. They were found in a snowy area, and they were deceased. That's all we really know at this time. But what makes it interesting for me, Walter, if you remember this summer, I told you a story about one of my Bigfoot investigators, Lee Strauss, and another one of my investigators, Jackie Harmon. They were up on Mount Adams in that similar area, very close to where these gentlemen just passed away. And they set up camp. They're in the middle of nowhere. And all of a sudden, their camp was surrounded that night by Sasquatch. Now, they had one of these floating tents that they were sleeping in, and Jackie actually ended up getting groped by the Sasquatch. Now, the Sasquatch started groping her around her ankles, and then moved up to her legs, eventually squeezed her butt, then her back, and then up to her shoulder and head. And when it got to her shoulder and head, that's where she kind of screamed out and the thing kind of stomped off. But they literally heard these Sasquatch around their camp from about midnight until daybreak at about 5:45, 6 in the morning, and they were so scared that they actually packed up camp and left. But I mean, Sasquatch are very known in that area, and so the fact that these gentlemen were there actually makes sense. Now, unfortunately, their families have this issue that, you know, they went out on Christmas Day and didn't come back, and that's really terrible for them. But the investigation is definitely ongoing.
What do you think the result will be? Because Dave Scott, you are an expert.
Personally, I think the investigation is going to be is they weren't prepared for the elements. They hadn't planned on going out for that long, and maybe something happened where one of them got injured or they got lost in the forest, which can happen incredibly fast. You know, maybe they got caught in a snowstorm and they couldn't find their footprints. Who knows what happened? But I think they got caught on the elements. They were not prepared for cold winter weather. They weren't prepared in case they got stuck in the forest. And I think that's what's going to be the relay. But if it is something different, something nefarious that we are looking at, of course, we will report it to you.
It's exciting to me when any guest on the show uses the word nefarious, a good SAT word, but it always leads to excellent storytelling. And you are a great storyteller. Did you have a good Christmas?
I did. I had a fantastic Christmas. And, you know, more so, I was very excited for my son and my daughters. My daughters couldn't make it up here this year, but hopefully next year they can. But my dad actually drove up, and I got to spend Christmas Day with my dad, which made it very special.
How old's your dad?
He's 74.
Good for him. Good for him and good for you. Those are the yummiest Christmases, especially, and I say this with not in any sort of cynical way at all. It's especially good when your parents are there and they're still very viable and very alive. 74 is a young guy. So I'm glad you got to spend time with him. I want to say Merry Christmas, but mostly I want to say thank you, Dave Scott. You're such a great contributor to Sterling every damn night, and you're such a good friend and a great broadcaster that it's just a real honor to have you on the show. So thank you very much. Thank you.
Don't forget to check your mail. I got you some swag.
Thank you, Ace. Thanks a lot.
Someone happy. Make just one someone happy. Make just one heart the heart you sing to. One smile that cheers you. One face that lights when it's near you. One girl you're everything to. Fame, if you win it, comes and goes in a minute. Where's the real stuff in life to cling to? Love is the answer. Someone to love is the answer. Once you've found her, build your world around her. Make someone happy. Make just one someone happy. And you will be happy. you win it. Comes and goes in a minute. Where's the real stuff in life to cling to? Love is the answer. Someone to love is the answer. Once you found her, build your world around her. Make someone happy. Make just one someone happy. And you will be happy too.
There are times of the year when you and I just deserve a few moments of artistic perfection. That, ladies and gentlemen, was the late, great Tony Bennett. This is Sterling every damn Sunday.
On Sterling, every night, it's Florida stories, Florida stories.
Sterling every damn night. I'm James Parker. Welcome to part two of Florida Story. A Florida HOA hires a tow truck to take cars that are illegally parked. Here's the problem. Can you be illegally parked in your own driveway? Well, according to the HOA, sure. They have all kinds of rules and regulations. And if you have a wheel that's out in the yard, then they consider that parking in your grass and you get towed. If you parallel park in front of your house, but your car is facing into oncoming traffic instead of with the flow of traffic, you're getting towed. HOA also gives these people speeding tickets in their own neighborhood. Dude, I am not celebrating the assassination of the United Healthcare CEO. And anyway, then there's no but to that. There's no follow-up. I will say, though, I am surprised this hadn't happened to an HOA president before. Or maybe it has and it just didn't make news. But if you guys think that the healthcare CEO has annoyed and ticked off people in America, the HOAs all across this beautiful nation have probably caused more heartburn, anger, and pain than the United Health CEO.
Hold my beard.
This one comes from Sarasota. There's a 52-year-old Florida man. He got in a rental car that's listed under a woman's name and took off. Now, I think that the man and woman know each other. He just didn't have permission to take her car, so it's listed as a stolen car. And then one that I don't get is he gets pulled over, and they're, what are you doing? Where are you going? Why did you steal this car? He's like, well, hey, I'm a Florida man. I'm from Sarasota. I'm headed to Mar-a-Lago because I want to have a chat with Donald Trump. That's all. He just loves the president. That's all. Why do people even say that? Why do they think that's an excuse? Did he think that they were going to say, oh, I'm sorry, you want to go see the president? Well, carry on in your stolen car, Mr. Florida man.
Hold my beard.
In Spring Hill, Florida, the sheriff's office got a call. It was a missing kid report, but not a missing human child, not a missing dog, not a missing cat, not even a missing goat, you know, like a literal kid. Someone was missing their baby kangaroo. Their baby kangaroo was missing. And then they have a picture of the baby kangaroo. And now all of a sudden, I want a baby kangaroo. I'll have to get a bigger yard then. Mom looks like she might be delicious. Can I eat a kangaroo?
Hold my beard.
This concludes today's episodes of Florida Stories. Subscribe to the Florida Stories podcast and get past episodes at waltersterlingshow.com. For Sterling on Sundays, I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Holidays mean strippers on the loose, Sterling every damn night.
Very popular rapper. His name is Lil Reese. And a lot of times, the rappers like to do a little jail time because it gives them what they call street cred. especially if they're doing, you know, the gangster rap thing. All right, Lil Reese is going to jail for 5 years. A couple of different things he's done. He assaulted a family member, but he also rolled into an exotic dancing place 6:30 in the morning. 24-hour-a-day service, apparently, at the strip club. He arrived in. He made a pass at a stripper. The stripper didn't want him to kiss her, and apparently started punching and strangling the exotic dancer, who, by the way, he used to date. Love. It's a complicated thing. And it has to be especially concerning when you're dating an exotic dancer, or had dated an exotic dancer, because their job is to make men happy. And men, meaning multiple men, because that's how they get paid. And again, some of our exotic dancers, well, they have a background of, not all, by the way, some are becoming veterinarians or accountants or doing something cool like that. But a lot of them also do a little prostitution on the side. Shocker. Lil Reese lost his temper and strangling a former girlfriend who's an exotic dancer at a strip club, not a good idea. Strangling people is never really a good idea. But if you're going to do it, doing it in public's even worse because you have witnesses. From the Champagne Room, this is Velo Hool. Strippers on the Loose, Sterling every damn night.
Sterling on Sunday, coming up.
Hi, I'm retired police detective Vic Ferrari. And on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, I tell you the real story of what goes on at Times Square during New Year's Eve. And it's not what you think. Coming up in moments on Sterling every damn night.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling every damn night.
Tonight, and you on the toll-free line.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by TikTok.
Now I will get dressed. Goodbye.
And the greatest threat to our happiness at the holidays is this.
It's not financial issues. It's not the loss of a job. It's not even facing poverty or dealing with illnesses and sicknesses. These things come and go in this life, and you can work through any of that stuff. The greatest potential threat to a marriage happens to be the families of origin, the people who become in-laws.
Yes, the people who become in-laws. It's always easy to forget when you're in the throes of love and engaged and rushing toward the wedding that you are about to marry not just one person, but dozens, maybe hundreds of people, in-laws, who will all have opinions about your marriage and, oh, more importantly, you. Yes, you. If you really refine it, drill down, you'll realize that the actual linchpin of all of this is your sister-in-law. Your sister-in-law controls your marriage. Because in moments of weakness, your husband or your wife will defer to their sister. They'll listen to their sister, who can drill into their heads in ways that no other relative can, because they have all of the information. They know about all the times you cheated. They know about all of your previous relationships and what went well and what didn't. They know the secret ways that your mother gets you to do things and the secret ways your father gets you to do things. They've got every package. Your brother, he doesn't pay that kind of attention, but your sister, she's up on all of the latest techniques to persuade you about your marriage. Not to mention, she's able to throw in stories that are fake news. She's able to put in little stories in there about, you know, I remember that time that you told me about your wife. I remember that time you told me about your husband. And you didn't. And you can't remember it, but she made up this little story to prove her point and to get things to go the way she wants them to. And I promise you, if your sister-in-law buys an ugly piece of furniture that you hate and puts it in her house, within 18 months, it will appear in your house. Not the same piece of furniture, a whole new piece of furniture that's identical. That's what will happen in your marriage. Beware. And they're not bribable. You'd think, well, if I butter up my sister-in-law, everything will go well. No, no, no. She'll just view that with suspicion. She'll like you less if you try to butter her up.
Sterling on Sunday, inspired by your wife.
Do you want me to show up on time, or do you want me to show up in a good mood? Because I can't do both. Do you want me to show up on time, or do you want me to show up in a good mood? Because I can't do both.
I know it's a less than popular topic, but I don't buy and have never bought this Taylor Swift-Travis Kelce relationship. She doesn't look like one of his girlfriends, and he doesn't look like one of her boyfriends. And every time I see a photo of them, it always something looks uncomfortable. And when that story came out back in September saying, well, you know, this is a public relations effort and somebody allegedly phonied up a contract, I'm like, that actually makes sense. It would have been over at the end of September. It would have gotten, you know, that kind of made sense to me. And then that contract was seen, it was publicized, and all of a sudden they were stuck. They had to continue the relationship to make that go away. To make that story go away, that they were doing a public relations deal where each of them was publicly helping each other. I don't know what help. And that's the funny thing. Do either of them need help? I don't think either of them need help. But they just don't look like a real deal. It always looks a little forced to me. 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. Every email I get gets answered. WalterMSterling@gmail, WalterMSterling@gmail. There's so many things I want to go over with you in such little time. There's this News 12 reporter in Connecticut, Long Island, on cable News 12. Her name's Annalisa. I'm not going to say her last name because I don't need the trouble. But she was fine. She was a big star. She was doing great. And then she says that she asked for a raise. Now, those reporters on cable news channels, local cable news channels, they're not making a lot of money. They're making like $60,000 to $80,000 a year, and that's where she was. During pandemic, she worked extra hard. She came in when others wouldn't come in. She dealt with technical issues, made the teleprompters work. Good employee, right? And they gave her a bonus. She asked for more of a bonus, and she asked for a raise, and she believes at this News 12 on Long Island or Connecticut, she believes that her colleagues were getting more money, a lot more money. And she'd asked for more money, and then her manager was like, not going to give it to her, kept blaming her for things that went wrong technically. They started to build up an annoyance file against her, according to Annalisa. Now, the first thing I did when I looked at this story is I'm like, well, I wonder if she was any good on the air. This is her on the air.
Dozens of scouts are out here tonight working through the night, the rain, the winds not stopping them as they sort and pack donated food for the hungry, for people right here in Connecticut.
A unique camping trip, these scouts are busy with a food collect-a-thon for their Thanks for Giving food drive. They are packing up boxes of food to give to families for Thanksgiving dinner.
She's really good on the air. She's way better than most local reporters. Professional, because she can write. She had good visuals with that. I figured I'd hear another flat, boring news. No, she was good. This Annalisa, that's her name. Annalisa is her first name. However, the story gets more bizarre. She started getting a little crazy over how they were treating her. And she started to get confused about what was fair, what wasn't fair. She felt she was being mocked, made fun of, not being treated right. she said, I'm not going to go through this. I'm going to quit. She tried to quit. And they said to her this insane thing. They said, well, you can't quit. First, your employment status has to be reviewed by HR. Well, what do you mean you can't quit? Of course you can quit. America. But she got all a little nutty. And there has to be more to this story than that she just didn't get a raise. But here's the thing to remember, at this time of year especially, and this is what Anna Elisa was not made aware of, and it has nothing to do with her case. I hope this all works out fine. No, I really don't. I'd rather have more to talk about. But here's the thing. If you work for a company like News 12 Long Island or News 12 Connecticut, if you work for a real company, not a small company, if you work for a corporation, you're not a barber, you're not working for a hair salon, you're not working for a delivery service, you're working for a big company, your manager has zero power to give you a raise. Your manager does not have the authority to give you a raise. You may think that person's your boss. You may think that person is the one who's going to decide whether or not you get a raise. They're not. And their boss probably is not the person, and their boss, and their boss, and their boss. The money is controlled by corporate finance, by people with Wharton MBAs, the most horrible people on earth. They're going to decide if that raise is going to go through. So this poor Anna Elisa, a good reporter at News 12, she was asking for a raise. She made her case. She had a good case. And they're dicking her around. And they're acting like they actually can decide. They can't decide. The person at a managerial level on the floor, you know, maybe a director, manager, maybe a vice president, they still have to get 10 signatures on that. I will never forget when I was an executive vice president at NBC and I wanted to hire a secretary, not a vice president. I wanted to hire a secretary. In order to hire that secretary, I had to get 14 signatures on that form. 14 freaking signatures to get somebody hired and on payroll. 14. It only stopped when I was in a meeting with the CEO of NBC, Fred Silverman, my hero. And I took one of those forms with 14 signatures, made a transparency of it, threw it on an overhead projector so the whole room could see the insanity. And they were all shocked. Oh, my God, don't show them. Don't show them. I said, Fred, I need to get going here. I can't have 14 signatures on every form. And he looked. He waved his hands. He looked at the head of HR and said, yeah, do something for Walter. Just do something. But if you're right now agonizing over, I want a raise. I deserve more money. Yeah, of course you deserve more money. But guess what? Your boss can't get you more money. I'm Walter M. Sterling, and this is Sterling Every Damn Sunday.
Walter, on this week's episode of Confessions of a Retired NYPD Detective, I'd like to talk a little bit about what it's like for an NYPD cop to work Times Square on New Year's Eve. So unlike what you see on television, it's not all nice and everyone's having a good time down there. First, NYPD cops have to get to their precinct probably about 2-3 o'clock, and then you got a carpool down. And you dress up and you put on your uniform. It's usually what they call hats and bats, which is helmets and nightsticks because people throw bottles and stuff down there. And you're putting on a bunch of sweatshirts, so you kind of look like Robbie in A Christmas Story. But then once you get down to Manhattan, you can't park near any of the police stations because they have minimal parking. So good luck finding a parking spot. You throw your permit in the window and you pray to God that Department of Traffic doesn't tow or ticket your car. Then once you get down there, you hope you have a supervisor that'll put you on his roster. You line up in groups of eight, and then it's the luck of the draw. You could get a great supervisor to watch you, or you could get a pain in the butt supervisor. And what I mean is, if you have a good supervisor, what he's going to do is, he's going to tell you if it's cold or raining out, okay, I got eight guys. You four guys stay out here and watch the crowd. You four guys go into a building and warm up. But if you got a guy that's shaky, he's going to keep you out there all night, and you're going to freeze to death. Well, you usually get your meal hour probably about 4 or 5 o'clock. They tell you, okay, come back in an hour. So now you're not really hungry, but now you're forced to find something to eat, and good luck with that. So it's usually a fast food place. You're not going to be going to Gallagher Steakhouse or one of those expensive eateries in the theater district. From there, after about 6 o'clock, you're on post and you're watching these people that are hoarded into these pens, as they're called, where they're like cattle. And there are no bathrooms for the public to use because the restaurants in that neighborhood have had their bathrooms trashed before. And they're not going to let anybody inside their restaurant unless you've got a reservation. Well, you're in there and you're hit with countless questions. Drunks crying. I got felt up. I got my pocket picked. You're there taking reports all night. Well, when the ball drops, that's when the fun begins. People start throwing things. The crowd starts getting a little unruly. But what happens is you got the hood rats from the five boroughs that pop up out of the train. They're sober as judges. And what they do is, after we start breaking down the barriers and the sanitation department is cleaning up the confetti, they start robbing people. So now you've got people running up to you. I lost my cell phone. I lost my chain. I lost my diamond ring. Good luck with that. And then we wind up taking report. So my advice to everyone is, stay home on New Year's Eve and don't go down to Times Square. For more behind the scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD Presumption and Dysfunction.